This is Sports Sunday with Brad Porter on Sports Radio 810 WHB.
That's how you get your Sunday off to a really fast start. It is Sports Sunday, Sports Radio 810 WHB in Kansas City. And across the Midwest, blasting 50,000 watts. And through the app, which you can get at 810WHB.com. Jed Marshall is behind the glass. My name is Brad Porter, live in the Rally House studios. The sun is beginning to peek out a little bit. Pretty rainy drive-in this morning. And for those of you, depending on where you live, I came from the Waldo area, a lot of areas of sitting and pooling water. So just be careful out there while you're driving around. Look forward to a good show today. Coming up at 9:30, Nick Garcia, former defender for the Wizards and Sporting Kansas City, is going to join us. We'll talk Sporting KC, and we'll talk World Cup. Spain and Russia just underway in Russia. So we will talk about that at 9:30 with Nick Garcia. At 10 o'clock, Clint Scholes will join us. Clint covers the Royals minor league prospects for Baseball Prospectus, BP Kansas City. And so we'll get some updates on some of their minor leaguers. Nicky Lopez, after his promotion to AAA Omaha, got off to a really hot start Friday night, but some concerning news for Khalil Lee at AA. And I know Stephen St. John really likes Khalil Lee. He talks about him a lot. But he was hit in the head with a pitch last night and was down for several minutes and had to leave the game. So we'll find out the latest from Clint Scholes. That'll be at 10 o'clock. At 11, Ken Kercheval, CBS Sports. Ben Kercheval. Ken Kercheval's the old actor. He used to be on the TV show Dallas. Ben Kercheval, the sports writer with CBSSports.com, will join us and talk about college football and answer the question, is it just Alabama and everybody else? Or are we going to have something fun this year in college football?
Clemson's always right there.
Clemson's always right there, too. It's kind of like Cavs-Warriors the last 4 years. It's kind of gone back and forth. So that'll be fun at 11 o'clock. And I've got sort of done some other things to ask Ben for college football. The new redshirt rule, which I really like. I know it's kind of getting in the weeds a little bit, but it allows kids to play up to four games in a season, and then if they don't play again or they get hurt, they don't lose a full year. Remember that happened to Tony Temple at Mizzou when he was a freshman or a sophomore. He got into a game and like five carries in got hurt, but he lost his whole season. He went through numerous appeals with the NCAA, and they would not grant him a medical redshirt season. So I like the new redshirt rule. How about Mike Gundy at Oklahoma State fighting with the athletics director? The AD called him out, said the recruiting wasn't good enough. They didn't rank high enough consistently in recruiting. You want to call out Mike Gundy at Oklahoma State. Remember who you are in football. That's always my thing. Remember who you are. I'm an Iowa football fan. Iowa football doesn't play for national championships. You make the occasional Rose Bowl. You win your 8-9 games a year. Maybe the odd 10-11 win season. And it's fine. Oklahoma State's AD needs to remember who they are. Yes, they have one of the richest men in the world supporting their athletics program. Doesn't buy you a national championship. Just doesn't. It's the way it is. So the top stories for today, at least locally, if you go to ESPN.com, everything is about the NBA because free agency commenced at 12:01 a.m. Central Daylight Time. There's plenty of NBA locally. Royals lost again, 6-4 to the Seattle Mariners, and they finished their worst June in franchise history, 5-21. 5-21. They may have had as many players ejected in this month as games they've won. You know, Moose got ejected. Danny Duffy got ejected. Alcides got ejected from a game like in the sixth inning, so it didn't affect his streak. And it's that Tom Payne umpire that hates the Royals. He's ejected several Royals over the last couple of years. So 5-21, the worst month of June in Royals franchise history. Yeah. And speaking of Alcides Escobar and the streak, Alcides Escobar in the month of June, keeping the streak alive while batting 116 with a 363 OPS. These are epically horrific numbers. Now, look, Ned Yost was asked the other day, will you consider ending the streak at some point? And he said, yeah, but what would be the use of it right now? I guess. But we got other guys who can play. No, we're not going to the playoffs. The Royals are not going to the playoffs. The Royals are going to lose 100 games, if not more, this season. But, man, guys with the bats. Nicky Lopez is 23 years old. I know he just got to AAA, but he's 23. Clock's ticking. Could use some at-bats. Jason Hamill, not good. 6 innings, 13 hits, 6 earned runs. But the real story of the game, the uniforms. I could never figure out if it was would turn the clock forward or back to the future, you know, because they brought the Back to the Future car out there, the DeLorean, out onto the field. And then did you see the robot that was supposed to throw out the first pitch? So this robot, I guess somebody spent like $1 million or $2 million to build this robot, which to me a robot pitcher would be a pitching machine, which we've had for decades. But they built this robot and they brought it out on the mound. How far do you think the ball traveled?
I'm guessing like 8 feet.
About 10 to 15 feet. It was a huge flop. It was Geraldo Rivera doing Al Capone's vaults. They built this thing. Here's the robot. It's throwing that first pitch. It's this robot. The team designed this robot. Like I said, with Al Capone's vaults. We're digging through this wall. We don't know what Al Capone had. For you younger kids, it was a big television event several years ago that was a complete dud.
What was in there?
Nothing. They didn't find anything.
Oh, great.
They were knocking down walls in some old building that Al Capone may have stored stuff in.
Hmm.
And Geraldo Rivera had built this thing up for weeks and gonna do it. It was live. It was national television. And when I was in grade school, our class, you have to watch this and you have to write a report on it. And the next day, it was kind of like, yeah, don't write a report on that. Colossal waste of time. So this robot that the Mariners and their staff brought out, this $1 million, $2 million robot, launched a ball 10 to 15 yards. But the uniforms was the talk of Twitter last night, at least of the people who were in my timeline. A lot of the Mariners were going no sleeves, hats backwards, jerseys untucked. Now, the starting pitcher, King Felix, had his jersey untucked and his hat backwards until the umpire told him he had to turn his hat around forward. I'm not sure why that was. I don't know if it was a distraction for the batter. I thought the untucked jersey would be more of a distraction for the batter. But I thought that was kind of cool. I mean, the uniforms were butt ugly, but it was kind of cool. And it was kind of a paying homage to Ken Griffey Jr. I mean, D. Gordon rocked it out. I mean, he had the no sleeves, hat on backwards, and the big gold chain out. And he totally ate up the atmosphere of the uniforms. The Royals uniforms, the hat was okay. Helmets were awful. Helmets were awful.
Yeah, those are pretty bad.
Are they going to auction off this stuff for charity or anything? Because I can't imagine anybody would want to keep that.
Well, that'd be a great cause, but no. I wouldn't bid on that.
No,
I'd just say,
that.
Yeah, you can have my money for charity.
Take it. So that was the talk during the game was the uniforms last night because the baseball was awful again. I mean, the Royals got out to a nice 3-0 lead. Moose hit a home run, number 16. Hey, Cardinals, need a third baseman. Toronto, need a third baseman.
Rudy,
Angels need a third baseman.
Yeah, Rudy raised a valid point before he went home about Mike Moustakas, though, in those uniforms. The images that I'm looking at, Wow, not slimming.
It was not flattering for Mike Moustakas to turn the clock ahead uniforms. Not flattering for Mike Moustakas, but he did turn and burn on a up high inside fastball and launched his 16th home run of the season, increasing his trade value, which I'm not sure how much more he increases in the next 3 to 4 weeks. I mean, it's probably is what it is. It's just a matter of the right deal. If he hits 4 more home runs before July 31st, I don't think the Angels all of a sudden, you know, feet off the desk and grab, oh my God, got it. Teams have decided what they need, and it's a wait and see right now for the next 3 to 4 weeks. But I'm guessing Mike Moustakas will be elsewhere. World Cup going on today, as I said, Spain and Russia now 9.5 minutes in with no score. The second game today, Croatia and Denmark at 1 o'clock. And if you want to know, you know, yesterday was the weeping and wailing and gnashing of teeth because Ronaldo in Portugal knocked out, Messi in Argentina knocked out. If you want a player and a team to watch that's very under the radar, I gave you Uruguay before the tournament started. But now that I've watched Croatia play a couple of times, and for me right now, maybe the best player in the tournament, Luka Modric, check out Croatia and Denmark. Some players out there. Got some ballers.
I've heard a lot of talk about Croatia lately, yeah. Though. There are a lot of people's, quote-unquote, dark horse picks. So yeah.
They're really good players.
They do have good players. Always a little troubling when a bunch of people get on one team, though, I think.
Yeah. I did the Sunday sound-off with Mick Schaefer before the World Cup started.
Heard of
Cody
him.
Tapp.
Yeah.
Yeah, Cody Tapp and Blair Kirkhoff from the Kansas City Star.
Good guy.
So we had to give our picks, and I think we all went Spain, just about. I think everybody went Spain across the board. And then I threw out my dark horse. I said Uruguay. Keep an eye on Uruguay. I really like them. They've gotten to the quarterfinals the last couple of World Cup cycles. They're just waiting to break through. They have really good players, really good defenders, too. Really good. And then Blair Kirkhoff tops me by reminding folks that Uruguay won the very first World Cup ever. I had forgotten that. But he comes over the top with the information Blair Kirkhoff does.
Kind of irrelevant to this tournament, but yes, a nice fact.
Good stuff. So Uruguay still is. They had their game yesterday, and Luis Suarez is flopping all over the place.
It's so obnoxious. So I went and watched the game with Petro and Manny.
How'd that go?
It was great, and he brought a friend, Armando, I forget Armando's son's name. But we had a great time, so obviously it was very pro-Portugal. But, yeah, watching Suarez fall all over and cry, and it was not pleasing.
No. And he's so talented and strong, he doesn't have to do that.
No, he doesn't need to.
He had one play where he got tapped from behind. He got tapped on the shoulder, so he begins his fall down, and he grabs the back of his head.
He did that multiple times.
Yes. I mean, if you'd go back and look at him falling down in the game, you would think he would have been decapitated by the end of it.
Yeah, and
Neymar's right there in terms of flopping for Brazil.
For sure. Suarez, though, is a great player. He did put forth a great performance yesterday.
Yes.
Granted, he didn't get a goal, but you could tell by the end of the match he was just dead tired.
Yeah.
But Uruguay, credit them. I mean, hats off. They played a great match defensively. And the strikes that they had, the first goal.
That was the most Suarez to Cavani.
Yeah, it was so
ridiculous.
Beautiful.
Yeah.
There's nothing that the Portuguese goaltender could do.
Speaking of beautiful things, Rudy Salazar, we know, is a big fan of Spain. Rudy, if you're in your car and you don't want a scoring update, don't listen. Because I'm about to give you a scoring update. Spain has just scored and lead Russia 1-0. I did not look up in time to see who it was. But I will find out for you. Nick Garcia is going to talk about this, plus Sporting KC at 9:30. Speaking of Sporting KC, for you Sporting fans out there who took in that debacle last night, this was the kind of game when you get American soccer fans who don't yet buy into Major League Soccer, and you tell them, just watch a game, watch like a Sporting game. They're exciting games. They're always exciting. That game last night was awful. And I'm talking about both ways. Montreal won this game 2-0, 2-0, okay? That first half of soccer, Montreal had absolutely zero interest in playing any kind of soccer at all. The Montreal game plan was, we're going to kick the ball around and we're going to kick it backwards. And we're going to lock in 9 guys on one side of the ball and park the bus, as they say in soccer. It was awful. I even tweeted out, Montreal owes the fans an apology. And I was speculating, can Major League Soccer fine a team, punish them for playing that kind of soccer? So at halftime, Peter Vermes, Sporting KC's manager, what's that? You have his comments? Okay. I know these post-game... Okay, so at halftime, Peter Vermes said, well, the humidity, I think, is affecting both teams. Okay, I can see that. Second half, Montreal comes out, quick strike goal, and it's Ignacio Piatti, who's one of the best players in the league. Okay, I'll let that go. Then a penalty in the box. Michael Parra takes a guy down. They get a PK, and it's 2-0. That's it. Sporting played down to the competition because that Montreal team played awful. And Sporting played worse. That was a terrible game. It lacked any entertainment value whatsoever, unless you are a Montreal fan and you just wanted to see your team score once or twice. Because they didn't play great soccer. So let's hear Peter Vermes' comments after the game. And he starts out here talking about the difference between the first half and the second half.
Honestly, I think that they had more than we did. We didn't have enough. I just don't think that we were, maybe aggressive is the wrong word. We just didn't have a killer instinct to go to them. I thought at the end we started creating some chances, but they were really fighting to win the game. You know, they're on a little bit of a roll, and they're feeling it. And, you know, shame on us for not doing better in the game. We just weren't good enough tonight.
Yeah, you wanted movement in the second half to force them into making decisions. Did you see enough of that?
Well, we tried to make some changes with some players that we thought could help that a little bit. But, you know, we gave up a very soft goal. It was a great strike, don't get me wrong. But we should have cleared the ball. I mean, there's just a bunch of little things that happened, and now all of a sudden we're playing catch-up, and it was just we didn't have it. We didn't have it tonight.
So what do you take from that moving forward onto the next one?
We got a short turnaround. We got to, get ourselves in gear and get ready for the next one.
That was those were the comments of Peter Vermes, Sporting KC manager, after the 2-0 loss to Montreal. That audio courtesy of Fox Sports and Carter Augustine on the interview, or as he's known to Nate Bucchetti and others, El Jefe, Carter Augustine. Yeah, and that's the thing, is they've got a short week this week, because normally after a game like that, Peter would have some very tough training sessions for the boys, for the fellas. Can't do that this week. Short work week. Just going to have to get after it. This is one of those games where maybe you don't dwell on the video too much, because there wasn't much there. As Peter Vermes said, they didn't have the energy. They didn't have the aggressiveness to be in that game. And it showed. You're going to have games like this. That happens. It just shouldn't happen against a team like Montreal. Like several weeks ago when Sporting went up to Minnesota and lost to a trash soccer team. It happens. And I did see somebody tweet out last night, the current kind of run of form for Sporting, as they say, is they lose a game and then they go 7 games unbeaten. Lose a game, then 7 games unbeaten. So hopefully that stays intact. But we'll talk to Nick Garcia at 9:30 more in depth about that. By the way, the score for Spain and Russia, Spain leads 1-0. It was an own goal, and I might snap my tongue off the roller if I try to pronounce the name of the Russian player who scored the own goal. It looks like Ignashevich. Sergei Ignashevich.
Those who are close to him, just call him Sergei.
Sergei, okay. I do that sometimes. I do play-by-play for soccer sometimes, and if it's sketchy and I know I'm not gonna stick the landing, just go with the first name or a nickname.
Shane Summers had the right strategy at the player pool draft of attempting to, like, he'd look at his phone and Lebo would text him the pick or whatever, and he'd just walk over to the guy who was running the draft and be like, that's the guy
we want.
That's
the guy. It's a challenge. I've done play-by-play for soccer for Sporting KC when they were the Wizards. I've done college soccer, UMKC, a lot of UMKC, and Rockhurst University games. And Rockhurst University has a lot of players from Italy on their roster, because I think they have a partnership with a development program, and those are sometimes challenging. But the coach, Tony Tocco, and his assistant, Sergio, will tell me their nicknames, so I can use their nicknames. And then on the UMKC side, they have several international players, and their head coach, Rick Benben, who is an institution in this town, along with Tony Tocco from Rockhurst, Rick Benben will sometimes just openly say, I don't know how to say his name. I never have. Here's the best stab at it. Or you just call him Rick for short. You can call him Tim for short, something like that. So we'll talk Sporting KC and World Cup. How about the NBA free agency? We didn't delve a lot into it yesterday other than to make smart aleck comments about who would want to play for the Clippers. And I was correct in that DeAndre Jordan not only opted out but didn't want to be there, because who wants to play for the Clippers? And DeAndre Jordan signed a one-year deal with the Mavericks. So if you want to know, ESPN.com, top stories. Every single story is NBA free agency. Every one. There's 6 top stories. And every single one of them is NBA. Now, the LeBron thing has taken some twists and turns. I mean, yesterday we had some guy on Twitter find out there was an airplane that went from, I think, Cleveland to Miami to Arguella. There's an island, Arguella, I think is how you pronounce it. And then that same airplane was chartered back to go to Los Angeles. So he began the speculation, LeBron's on his way to Los Angeles because that's where he was vacationing. And now this plane that started off in Cleveland, and so then they mobilized at the Van Nuys Airport in Los Angeles, and LeBron shows up. And he's got a home in Los Angeles.
Yeah, I know. That's wild. Sometimes when I fly into KCI, a lot of people freak out. They're like, oh, my God, he's here.
You get the tail number?
Yeah. But then again, it's because I live here.
Yes.
I have a home here.
You're not signing with,
signing with the Chiefs.
No.
Coming back home.
So that set that one off. And then the folks in Denver have now come out and said that they've locked up a couple of their most important guys, and now they have their sights set on LeBron. What would you set the odds on of LeBron James signing with the Denver Nuggets?
4%.
I might give it 1. I mean, maybe he walks in and they've got a package of money and other things they can offer him that other teams and
Papa John's for guys.
Oh my gosh. That guy. Well, I immediately thought with the Lakers, you know, that's probably a strong chance, but you know, he can't get as much money as he can in Cleveland. Cleveland can give him, what, $205 million, the Lakers, $152. But my deal is where he's going to make his real money is when he gets his new shoe sponsor, Big Baller Brand. If you go into the Lakers, that's the home of Big Baller Brand. I mean, he could have his own office at Big Baller Brand, right?
Yeah, he sure could.
I would love to see LeVar Ball pitch the Big Baller Brand to LeBron James.
It wouldn't work, though, because Lonzo Ball's the greatest player of all time. You couldn't have trash like LeBron James being associated with that greatness.
Think of the star power Big Baller Brand could have. They've already got Lonzo Ball, right? They could add LiAngelo when he signs with the Lakers, and then LaMelo in a couple of years, and then LeBron James. That's the four horsemen right there. All in Lakers uniforms, all wearing Big Baller Brand shoes.
I'll give my friend Kurt Nelson credit for this one.
Okay.
When you say star power, it's kind of equated to this. All of the people who work in the adult film industry are not stars.
Correct. I think it's the name has evolved over time to just that's what you do for a living. Not
I kind of feel that way with how you equated star power with the with the
Wait,
Ball family.
I'm being facetious and sarcastic about the whole thing, but that's where the money's made. On that note, we're going to take a quick timeout. Now the clouds have rolled back in again. I don't know what today's going to do. Who knows? Coming up at 10 o'clock, Clint Scholes will join us. We'll talk about Royals prospects, the top names coming up. Nicky Lopez continues to rocket through the system. At 11 o'clock, Ben Kercheval from CBSSports.com will join us, talk a little college football. But coming up next, Nick Garcia, former defender for Sporting KC, the Kansas City Wizards, also logged minutes with the U.S. men's national team, is going to join us. We'll talk World Cup, we'll talk Sporting KC, and whatever else pops up. You're listening to Sports Sunday. Jed Marshall is producing and co-hosting. My name is Brad Porter. We're live in the Rally House Studios. Back with more right after this.
This is Sports Sunday with Brad Porter on Sports Radio 810 WHB.
Welcome back to Sports Sunday, Sports Radio 810 WHB in Kansas City and across the Midwest. Rainy morning. Sun peeked out for a few minutes. Now the clouds are back in. I don't know if it's supposed to keep raining. I haven't checked my Gary Lezak weather report for this morning. But I know we have listeners and friends up in the state of Iowa that we hear from. And thinking about those people, if you've seen the footage of the floodwaters across the state of Iowa, it's quite terrifying. I think Ankeny, Iowa, and some folks here might know where that is, had over 10 inches of rain yesterday, and they had several areas with 8 inches and 7 inches, and the flooding is pretty devastating. So for our friends and fans and folks in Iowa, thinking about you today, hopefully that you can get dug out and cleaned out and get everything back on track. Back to the World Cup update. Spain leading Russia 1-0 in the knockout stage. This is day two of the knockout rounds. They lead 1-0, courtesy of an own goal by the Russians, by Sergei. We'll try to make contact with Nick Garcia here to talk about that and talk about the Sporting KC loss last night, 2-0 to Montreal.
Well, and it's always fun. I know Nick is busy, probably doing stuff with the...
Yes, he runs Brookside Soccer, and he's always out at the field.
With his youth people. So hopefully he'll get back to me. I sent him a text and left him a voicemail. But one of the things I thought was really interesting before we went to break was Peter Vermees' comments. I don't know. We didn't really get a chance to react to what he said. I thought it was really telling the fact that he actually called out his teammate, his team, essentially saying that Montreal Impact wanted the game more than his players. It's one of the things that I find so refreshing about Peter Vermees and his ability to send messages not only through the media, but as you mentioned, he doesn't have the advantage this week of having more time to be able to punish the guys, for lack of a better term, on the training field. But I don't know. It's just one of the things that makes Peter Vermees one of the best managers, I think, in all of Major League Soccer.
Well, I think about 4 weeks ago after a bad loss, he came out after the game and said, "I haven't looked at the tape yet, but you can be darn sure training is going to be tuned up this week." So they weren't physical enough. They didn't have enough energy. And last night was the same case. It wasn't there. I mean, Montreal was content in the first half to just do nothing. Knock the ball around, play catch, knock it back to the goalie. And as soon as they got that first goal, I didn't see anything from Sporting the rest of the game. Just disappeared. I mean, look, I know what happens. It's a long season. Not every game is going to be spectacular. Well, when you're the first-place team in the Western Conference and you're playing against a team that's not very good in Montreal...
They've been playing better soccer, but
but they're not very good. No.
And to me, that's one of the troubling things about Sporting this season is we've seen such high level of play from them, and they can look so consistent, and then they come out, like you said, that the trend appears to be win 7 in a row, lose. Win 7 in a row, lose. That they drop these turds, though, in the middle of looking so great in the form and the way that they're playing. To me, that's what's scary, having it be an Americanized version of what soccer is. Mm-hmm. In the playoffs, you're not afforded the right to have a bad performance. And I hope that Sporting uses these as learning opportunities. But again, I go back to Peter Vermees being one of the best coaches, if not the best coach in Major League Soccer, and being able to use these as teachable moments and being able to hopefully get Sporting over the hump and bring another MLS Cup back to Kansas City.
And it's on the players. They've got to hold themselves accountable and each other. I mean, there'll have to be some locker room talk from Matt Beisler, the captain. Going to have to say some things. Because, again, you have a mix. We've talked about this all season long. You have a mix of new players who are not used to this system, this style. And you also have younger players that have been developed by Sporting KC through the Swope Park Rangers program. And may need a kick in the ass. This is how you win in Major League Soccer. This is also how you lose in Major League Soccer. You can lose and still look good and energized. That loss last night was brutal. So we'll have to see. I had written down some things on college football, because I've been hearing a lot of talk all week, and folks have been tweeting at me. We're going to talk about it at 11 o'clock with Ben Kirchhoff from CBSSports.com. But it's kind of getting to that time where, you know, the Royals aren't doing anything. Sporting plays once a week, occasionally twice a week. But it's hard to fill the days, and the wait for college football is going to become a struggle for the next 3 to 4 weeks until they get into the camps and really get going. And I read an interesting article last night, a really long article, about Jimbo Fisher at Texas A&M. And I know this doesn't have anything to do locally, but they were talking about how they were able to engineer getting him out of Florida State and to Texas A&M. And I didn't know some of the backstory of Florida State. At Florida State, the booster club doesn't control how the money is spent. Like the booster club raised, let's just throw around a number. We've got $80 million. What do we want to spend it on? Well, we need a new weight room. We want to improve the south end of the end zone. We need an indoor practice facility. But Florida State, the booster club, doesn't decide how the money is spent. School officials decide. And the coach, in this case Jimbo Fisher, can have his input, but he doesn't get really much of a say. And it started to grind on Jimbo Fisher. Now, for a guy making $4 and $5 million a year, that doesn't seem to me to be a problem, but he grew frustrated with it. Texas A&M, whose AD had known Jimbo Fisher for a long time, I believe going back to their days at Washington, knew he was frustrated and found a way to get $75 million guaranteed over 10 years. Texas A&M, we got everything. Got a great stadium. What else do you want? Jimbo Fisher, you tell us what you want and spend the money. And this is the arms race in college football. So I got to thinking, you know, Mizzou, being in the SEC, they're rebuilding a lot of their stadium. They have been upgrading some of their facilities. But in the grand scheme of things, Mizzou is never going to get there in the SEC. They're just not. They're not big enough. They can't recruit against Alabama. I don't know if they can recruit against Texas A&M. LSU. And the arms race is a very, how do I put this? You can build all the fun toys you want, but what are you as an institution? What is your history? Can you get there? In Texas A&M's case, when I read the article, they've tried to restart their climb to a national championship three or four times in the last 30 to 40 years, and they can't get there. Jimbo Fisher going to get them there? I don't know. They have a great stadium. They have a great fan base. A decent history. What? They only won the Big 12, what, one time? Haven't won the SEC. Expectations. But Mizzou is going to get a lot of national attention this year because Drew Locke happens to be the quarterback. Drew Locke is already on the Heisman hot list, the watch list, and things like that. I mean, he set all the SEC records last year for yards and touchdowns. So they get the national attention. But that only takes a program so far. So Ben Kercheval at 11 o'clock to talk about that. I had to pause because I was looking over at something to make sure I didn't miss something. Go ahead, Jed. You had something? No? Okay. I was also thinking about, I heard a conversation this week. I think it was somebody on Seren's show, I think, talking about college football. And they were talking about Bill Snyder at K-State and kind of the state of their program. Where do they sit right now with a coach who's 77 going on 78 years old? And can K-State be effective? The win-loss total, what was the over-under? Was it 6? I think it was 6 for K-State. And the person who was talking to Seren, I should have wrote this down. I think I was in the car listening to it. But said, the thing about the Big 12 is almost every game, take Kansas out of it, every other game in the Big 12 is winnable and losable. No matter who you are. I mean, even KU beat Texas a couple of years ago, for crying out loud. But for K-State, Bill Snyder is the coach who's going to be close in all those games that are winnable. And almost every game in the Big 12 is winnable. And we talked about the quarterback system that they employ. And I'm going to guess 100% it's going to be a rotation. It's going to be a little bit of Skylar Thompson. It's going to be a little bit of Alex Delton. I like both of them. Both have their strengths. Personally, I'm biased towards Skylar Thompson because I watched him play high school football at Fort Osage. I think he's a tremendous quarterback. It's going to be a rotation. Why don't more schools do that?
I think it's the old adage, if you have two quarterbacks, you don't have any.
You don't have any? Unless you've done it your whole career, right? Like Bill Snyder's done it. Most of his career. He's done the rotation. He's not been afraid to rotate.
No, I think it's an old-fashioned, maybe not an old-fashioned. I think it's an outdated system of trying to do things.
Right.
You need to have a quarterback. I understand that the college game is different than the NFL game. There's a lot more of a mobile quarterback, not necessarily your prototypical pocket passer. The issue becomes, though, if you're putting a guy at risk with all those shots, it's just outdated. You can't run an offense like that and succeed in college football in this day and age. The game has been spread out too much. The pass is too much a part of the game.
Right.
I know it sounds blasphemous to say that Bill Snyder might be at a moment where the game is passing him by, but to me it seems like what trend would you say is going that way?
Well, I'll be interested to see what Alabama does with their quarterbacks. Because the young kid, in my opinion, is better.
Yeah,
Yes, it's one of those things where if you try to say the name and you're not sure, you're not going to stick the landing.
The Hawaiian kid.
But I know he got chances last year, and he looked pretty darn good.
Well, I mean, they put him in the national championship
yes.
game, and he engineered the comeback in an extremely entertaining game
yes.
to watch. Alabama is a freak program. I don't put them, obviously, on the same level as what K-State's doing, so I think that's kind of a different issue. You could throw Oklahoma in the same boat with
Absolutely.
Kyler Murray since he's, you know, a 5'9", more of a dual threat guy. I guess when I get to K-State, I think you have to go with Skylar Thompson. The ability to throw the ball, I know that, again, Coach Snyder, his greatness is in taking guys that aren't necessarily the 5-star kids, you know, it's maybe the 2-3 stars, and getting them to play up levels. I think that you have to take the quarterback that has the higher upside and go with him. That's who you have to ride with.
For me, it's Skylar Thompson. Like you said, he's got the better arm.
And if you want to use Alex Delton, I understand you can engineer packages around that. If you want to get his athleticism on the field, though, look at what Kansas was able to do with Kerry Meyer uh-huh. back in 2008. They granted made him into a wideout. Maybe you could do something like that with Alex Delton and have him as your emergency quarterback.
Yeah. Like a flanker package or a jet sweep package. I don't know if he's got that kind of speed to be running jet sweeps, but yeah, I see what you're saying.
He looked fast enough last year to at least be able to get his athleticism on the field in some sort of capacity.
I wouldn't mind seeing two quarterbacks in the backfield at the same time.
If you had one,
make the other team
one right-handed and one left-handed, that'd be certainly an interesting way to look at football moving forward.
That's the good thing here. So we talked about Mizzou with Drew Lock, going to be the Heisman. I'm not going to call him a finalist candidate, or he's going to be in the mix for the discussion. And an update, by the way, just going to give you an update from the World Cup. This is not live play-by-play. It happened 10 seconds ago. Russia has just scored on a penalty kick and has tied Spain 1-1 with about 4-plus minutes to go in the first half. So the Russians and the Spaniards are tied 1-1.
Shocking. It seems like the Russian crowd is enjoying that quite a bit. Oh, on the handball.
They call a handball
wow.
on Spain on a corner kick. To me, that seemed a little inadvertent, but you can't get your arms up in the air.
Agreed, and the Russians are on PEDs anyways, and we all know that Putin has rigged it with FIFA that they're going to win the World Cup, so this is all, it's all irrelevant what we're watching. I'm sure that the draft doctor Tim is listening and being like, yeah, that makes total sense, but yeah, Russia's going to win the World Cup. Breaking news.
No, they're not.
If your lunch wager?
This is it. Yeah, I'll put that on. I have one wager going with my youngest son, okay?
I don't want Russia winning the World Cup, just for the record.
We were picking our teams that we wanted to root for with the United States out. We had our options, and Mexico was our most obvious option because the boys are half Mexican. And then you throw in my blood, and I have Swedish blood on my mom's side a lot. So Mexico and Sweden were kind of our picks. And I didn't think Sweden was going to get out of the group stage. See, I'm going off on a tangent here. I didn't think Sweden would go on past the group stage, but Sweden and Mexico advance. Germany goes home. So we're looking at the brackets, and my youngest, who's wanted a hamster for like 5 years, he goes, not doing a hamster. I have a dog, not doing a hamster. We've been through a dozen fish, too, that haven't worked out, been cursed in that department. So anyway, so my youngest son says, if Sweden win the World Cup, I get a hamster. And I said, okay. I'll concede. If Sweden wins the World Cup, you can have a hamster.
I don't have any children, Brad, but yes. I'm going to let you know that doesn't seem like a great parenting strategy to let the child say, if this, then I get
this.
Well,
it was more of the bet. Can I have a... I was giving it a more dramatic flair.
Sure. Sure.
If Sweden wins, can I have a hamster? Yes, absolutely. If Russia wins, what do you want, Jed?
$100.
No. I don't have just an extra $100.
No, that's fine. I don't know. I'll have to think about it. Maybe we can take a break, and I'll think about what I want if Russia wins the World Cup.
My final thing I'll give you, as we go to break, we talked about the quarterback at Mizzou, the quarterbacks at K-State. Think about the quarterbacks at KU going into the season. Can you name more than one? We'll throw that out there, and then we'll move on to other things. 10 o'clock, Clint Scholes talking Royals baseball prospects, some of the hot names coming up. And at 11, Ben Kirchhoff, CBSSports.com, talking college football. You're listening to Sports Sunday. Jed Marshall's on the other side of the glass. My name is Brad Porter. We're live in the Raleigh House studios, and you're listening to Sports Radio 810 WHB.
This is Sports Sunday with Brad Porter on Sports Radio 810 WHB.
Back on Sports Sunday, Sports Radio 810 WHB on a overcast Sunday morning, Kansas City and across the Midwest. Jed Marshall running the show behind the glass. My name is Brad Porter, live in the Raleigh House studios here at WHB. And I left off the last segment by asking you if you could name a KU quarterback or more than one. The two you might remember, Peyton Bender and Carter Stanley. And the other one is Miles Fallon. And we can talk about that more with Ben Kirchhoff, because you got to get the quarterback right, and KU under David Beatty has not. Speaking of getting things right, Nick Garcia joins us on the line now, former Sporting KC Wizards defender, played with the U.S. men's national team. Getting things right, Nick Garcia, before the World Cup started, I asked you for a surprise team that would get out of the group stage, and you nailed Russia, and Russia right now is at halftime tied 1-1 with Spain.
Yeah, hoy Dios míos, buenos días. I'm sorry, I'm probably a little bit tardy. I got caught up in watching the last little bit of the half. So it's a crazy World Cup. Nothing like being home in Mother Russia and their team going into the half here against Spain, a very good Spanish team, tied.
Well, you're a defender. We're a defender your entire career. I don't know. Did you see the handball that Spain committed to give Russia the PK?
Yes, I did.
Okay, that's one of the best defenders in the world, Gerard Piqué. Why were his arms up in the air on a corner kick?
So that is the question, right? And that is or has been the discussion in my house. So, yes, it is a PK. No, it's not. The reason why it is a PK is because he puts his hands up in an unnatural motion in an unnatural area. And that's why the referee, called it the way he did. So it was the proper call. And why he does it, I don't know. I don't know if he was trying to block somebody or whatever, but, bad things happen when you make bad decisions.
And you get your arms up in the air. And the Russians, of course, made their own gaffe with the own goal. I did not get to see the replay of it yet. But as a defender, I'm sure you can sympathize with those situations.
Yeah, you can. But in these big games, small things, sometimes play the biggest factor. And, the own goal that Russia had, it was almost like a football play, where they were trying to take out Fernando Torres. He thought he had a good shot on goal. He did very well to keep his eyes on the ball. But, for whatever reason, hit the Russian defender's, cankle and went in the back of their own net. So, it isn't the first time. It isn't the last time. And I think you've seen fewer of these here in this World Cup. But, defending is what they say that wins championships, and I think that's definitely going to be the case here for the final stages.
The second half, Spain of Russia, should be exciting. The Spain fans will be kind of watching through their fingers like a horror movie, hoping something terrible doesn't unfold in the second half and they find a way to get back in it. And then our second game today, Croatia and Denmark. I know that doesn't jump off the page as, oh, Croatia, Denmark, these are two great. I got to watch this game. But Croatia is really, really good. And for me, I think Luka Modric has been, if not one of the top three players in the tournament so far, maybe the best.
Yeah, I'd probably agree with that, right? You know, and I think if you look at, you know, those two teams, I think they play very well-organized soccer. You know, I was kind of thinking about this here earlier. You know, most of the teams that have a lot of success have a plan. They stick to it. You know, and they have some special players, but they also have some worker players. You know, and look at Uruguay yesterday as a perfect example. You know, you could have said that Portugal had more stars and more ability, but at the end of the day, you know, Uruguay was committed to a game plan. And I think that's part of the reason why Messi in Argentina has gone home early. You know, Messi at times, I think people could say, looked a little lazy. Suarez, you know, was not like that. Cavani was not like that, you know, for Uruguay. And I think both, you know, Denmark and Croatia are two similar teams. You know, I think Modric is one of those guys that puts in the work. He is a great team leader. You know, his teammates have come out and said that he kind of operates and thinks at a different level. So, It again, you know, in the World Cup, you know, you have to have the plan. You also have to have a coach that you can rely on that can put out the best players in the best formation. And I think, some of the teams that have gone home early, I think Senegal is another one. You know, those guys just probably weren't as disciplined and didn't have a plan that they put into play as well as some of these other ones.
We're talking with former Wizards and Sporting KC defender Nick Garcia, World Cup, and then we'll get to Sporting. I'm not going to spend a lot of time on Sporting because, frankly, that was not fun to watch last night, yeah. But game tomorrow, I think most of American soccer fans will be glued to their TV sets. Brazil and Mexico. I mean, in terms of team name, none bigger here in North America than Mexico. In terms of name value and history, none bigger than Brazil. For Brazil, they'll have no Marcelo tomorrow. Maybe probably the best left back in the world. A very entertaining player, but no Marcelo. But this game, the way Mexico played their first two games in pool play, the way Brazil can turn it on when they want to, I am just so looking forward to this. I wish I didn't have to wait till 9 o'clock tomorrow morning to watch it.
Well, at least it isn't 9 o'clock at night, right?
Right.
You know, and I think if you look at both of these teams, you know, you're right. I think Brazil has been here. They've done this what seems like a million times, and they know it's a marathon. They typically are somewhat slow to get going. But once they get going, they are, you know, full bore, 100% bought in. And I think, you know, they're kind of coming into stride. Mexico, you know, had, you know, what you could say is maybe the most important win thus far in recent history for them, beating Germany. You know, they kind of stumbled a little bit. But I think if you look at their guys, Chucky, Vela, you know, Chicharito, others, Ochoa and Gol, you know, they have a pretty good plan. You know, we know that Brazil will not be an easy foe for them. You know, and they're obviously representing CONCACAF here and where the United States, you know, kind of, you know, applies their international prowess. So this game for me, I think tomorrow would be a good one. You obviously can't count out the Belgium-Poland game, which I think is another one. So there are a lot of good games. I think each day kind of has its own little, you know, chapter. And, yeah, I think that Mexico-Brazil game tomorrow should be a pretty good one.
Well, Nick, let me ask you this to see if I'm accurate, because I was thinking maybe I was blowing this out of proportion. In the Mexico-Germany game, well, to me, and I take it personally because I'm a fan of Mexico, I thought the Germans went out of their way and individual players would walk up to individual Mexican players, purposely stand over the top of them and look down to let them know, we're bigger than you and we're better than you and we're going to crush you. And the Mexicans reacted by saying, okay, we're going to run you right off this field and right out of the tunnel. And I thought, okay, that was my thought during the game. Maybe I was overreacting, and so I was kind of thinking about it. Then I watched the end of the Germany-Sweden game, and the German coaches are almost physically going after the Swedish coaches, pointing and screaming at them, and we're better than you, we kicked your ass. That tells me everything I need to know. This German team came in overconfident and did not respect their opponents.
Yeah, no, I think that's pretty spot on, you know, conclusion that you've made, and I think, you know, they probably were resting a little bit on, you know, yesteryear, and, you know, obviously, being the champion coming in is very difficult to repeat. And it hadn't been done in some time. I think Brazil might have been the last champion to do that, maybe even a German side. But at the end of the day, you're only as good as your next game. And obviously they were not good on that game. You know, give the Mexicans credit. You know, they have played historically very good games against U.S. foes that have been pretty physical, similar to the German style of play at times. And I think they were up for it. They knew that it was going to be a tough game. They knew that if they can impose their will on this German team and get a little bit of luck, it would happen, And then sometimes that's what it takes, And the Mexicans aren't always the biggest. They are most often, the fastest of foot. And, this game against Brazil will be very important, right? Because Brazil, I think, has a great ratio of physicalness to tactical and technical ability. And, a lot of those guys, play in some of the best clubs throughout the world. So Mexico, it's your time to shine or fail.
We're talking with Nick Garcia, former Sporting KC and Wizards defender. We can move on. We got a couple of minutes left here to Sporting KC. And look, we all know there are games during the season. It's a long season. Sometimes you can get physically worn down. We know there are these duds that happen. And I was watching the game against Montreal last night. The first half was awful, and Montreal looked like they didn't want to even be part of that game. And they parked the bus. They wanted a 0-0 draw. At least that's the way it looked. In the second half, they come out. They get an odd goal. Piatti's a great player. No, not taking anything away from him. But Sporting had nothing for Montreal, and especially in the second half. And Peter said as much after the game. And it was a bad exhibition for 90 minutes.
Yeah. And you're right, it does happen. Look at the Royals. They're coming up the worst month in franchise history. We know Sporting has never and will never probably do that. But, players mentally and physically need a little bit of a break. You have the MLS All-Star game coming up. You have some guys who are nicked up and bruised and battered. So I think that kind of plays into it. But think about this, right? Before the Houston game, before Sporting KC made that miraculous comeback, there was some pressure put on, I think, the forward line to get goals. Sporting came out and said, hey, we are looking in this transfer window to bolster our front line. Looks like they've done probably in the past 2 years since Dom Dwyer has been gone. But, you look at Rubio, you look at Shelton, you look at Crozet, Eli Sanchez, who's now going to be on that all-star group with Zuzi. They have something to play for. And, yes, travel kind of plays into it. So I'm not giving them any excuses, but just knowing firsthand, you are going to kind of have these blunders. So as long as it does not become a trend, I think Peter is willing to kind of take this gulp and move on.
Speaking of Dom Dwyer, just one comment. I'm thoroughly convinced he engineered his way out of Kansas City. He wanted to get to Orlando City. I hope he's enjoying his time down there because they're awful.
Yes, they are bad. They had a horrendous game against Atlanta here yesterday, losing 4-0. So, be careful what you wish for, right?
Exactly. All right, final thing for you, Nick Garcia, before we let you go. It's a short work week for Sporting KC, so Peter can't really, put the pedal to the metal and, I guess punish the team for not playing very good. But they've got to get themselves together in relatively short order here.
Yeah, they have a game coming up Wednesday against Salt Lake. Then you come back home next weekend, so there is a lot. You also have the travel going from Montreal to Salt Lake and then back here and, regeneration. But, Sporting is very good at having a plan. I would presume Peter's going to probably put in some younger guys, get some other guys some close minutes, because he knows that, Salt Lake has always been tough. I think Kyle Beckerman just played his 300th game, which is kind of crazy. But, Salt Lake hasn't had the best of seasons. I think if you look at a Seattle or L.A. Galaxy, historically some of these teams that have done well haven't done well. So Peter's, I think, right at the right spot, right here atop the table. But it's about managing games, managing guys, and getting the most out of this, kind of glum, long stretch of summer that July and August are going to present.
All right, that is Nick Garcia. Nick, thank you very much. I know I will see you at Swope Park, Brookside Soccer. We're signed up for the summer session, so we will see you out there, I'm sure, on a regular basis.
Awesome, Brad. I appreciate it. Enjoy the games.
Absolutely. Thank you very much. You too. That is Nick Garcia, former Sporting KC and Wizards defender, played minutes with the U.S. men's national team, and I had written out on my bracket before the World Cup started, I had Brazil and Mexico meeting in that first round of the knockout stage, and my pick? Mexico. I think I'm nuts for that, but that's my pick. That's what I went with. All right, we are just about out of time for this hour. Coming up next, Clint Scholes is going to join us from BP Kansas City Baseball Prospectus. Talk about the Royals prospects up and coming, the latest with Nicky Lopez, Nick Prado, and everybody else. We'll take a quick timeout. You're listening to Sports Sunday, Sports Radio 810 WHB.
This is Sports Sunday with Brad Porter on Sports Radio 810 WHB.